Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of True Crime All the Time. I'm Mike Ferguson, and as always, with me today is my partner, Gibby. Gibbs, what's going on today?
What's happening, Mike? It's a good day, man.
It's always a good day.
Well, it's Friday.
I'm still working on that retort after I say, hey, Gibby.
Hey, Gibby.
Still working on that. Hey, folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. So first, I got to give a shout out. You know, we had a lot of new Patreon supporters this week and last week, and amazing support. So Olivia, Mike, Megan, Lainey, who actually has her own podcast, True Crime Fan Club.
Yeah.
So check that out. A little plug in there for Lainey. Can't express enough appreciation for the support that we get from our folks on Patreon. Anybody can support us on Patreon for as little as $2. Just go to patreon.com/truecrime all the time. You know, we try to do a weekly update with what we're doing coming up. We try to do some bloopers, although I'm a little behind on the bloopers. And it's not because we don't make bloopers. Believe me, we make plenty of bloopers.
You do.
I do. And you do. So make sure you visit our website at truecrimeallthetime.com. You'll find all of our social media information. Click on the merchandise tab. We got two new stores open. One new one. One we've had for a little while, but the new one's got, we got some coffee mugs, we got tumblers, we've got mouse pads, pens, a little bit, you know, smaller items than the store we had previously. Definitely, please make sure you rate and review us on iTunes or whatever Android app you use. And as always, tell your friends about us. You know, word of mouth is such an amazing thing. And then last but not least, don't forget about our other podcast, True Crime All the Time Unsolved. Same format, same hosts, me and Gibby. The only difference is we're talking about unsolved crimes. We're focusing on the litany of suspects after we get through the crime itself. We just don't know who did it, but we're talking about who it could have been. All right, Gibbs, so let's talk about Tommy Lynn Sells. Topic of our case today.
TLS.
TLS for short. You may see him as the coast-to-coast killer.
Yeah, I've seen that out there.
I saw that in a couple places. You know, everybody's got to have a nickname. Every serial killer, they have to assign some type of nickname.
What would yours name be?
Well, I don't know. It sure as hell wouldn't be the coast-to-coast killer because I don't...
The podcast killer?
I don't leave the house very except to go to work. This guy is he's something, and we're going to find out as we go along.
Yeah, he's definitely, he's up there.
Yeah, I mean, they're all evil, right? We know that.
Yeah.
And most of these people are complete psychopaths. The one thing about him that we're going to see as we go along that I think is much different than some of the other people that we've covered is this guy was all over the map. I mean, he didn't just operate, you know, like in one city or one area.
Right.
A couple of areas. This guy crisscrossed the country for essentially 20 years.
Which makes it very difficult for police
Well, and I think it also makes it scarier because it was almost like he just killed whoever he came into contact with.
Right. No rhyme or reason. Just if he felt like doing it, he did.
Right. He didn't have what you would see in a lot of cases, like a really specific MO. You know, it's not like he was targeting
a certain type of woman.
Yeah.
A certain type of. Yeah. A
fetish. He right. didn't have really that.
Really
he,
wasn't like BTK.
No.
Wasn't like some of the other ones that we've covered.
No. And for some reason, that kind of stuck with me as being, I don't want to say scarier, but maybe it is because there's no rhyme or reason.
Is it kind of ominous?
Ominous?
Ominous.
Or ominous?
Ominous.
I'll go with ominous, yeah.
Yeah, ominous.
Maybe. I don't know.
Kind of.
So I think before we even get into Tommy Lynn Sell's early life, just want to play a quick clip of him. And, you know, the great thing about this guy, that sounds horrible. There's no great things about this guy.
Right.
What is interesting about this case, though, and the content out there, this guy liked to talk to the media. So there are quite a few interviews that he did. And
he enjoyed the spotlight.
Yeah, he liked to talk. Now, we can only put so much in, but there is a ton of it out there.
The first time I did a shot of dope, it was the best feeling I ever had in my life. And the first time I killed somebody, it was such a rush. And it was just like that shot of dope. Every time I did it, it was that rush again. And I started chasing that high. I am hatred. When you look at me, you look at hate. When you look at me, you know what hate is. I don't know what love is. Two words I don't like to use is love and sorry, because I'm about hate. I don't have no feelings no more. And I like to watch the eyes fade, the pupil fade. It's just like setting their soul free. It's just like that drug. I'm after that drug again. I don't have an on and off switch. I'm just after that drug. I'm after that feeling.
Well, he's after a lot of things.
Yeah, he is.
Because he said that a lot of times. And I don't know, he didn't sound scary to me, but obviously you can tell that he doesn't care about a whole lot. And you're going to see that as we go along. He has the classic traits of a psychopath.
Doesn't sound scary, but what he says.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about what he just said about staring you in your face while he's killing you and watching
the lights go out.
Yeah,
right.
Watching your pupils fade away, man.
And maybe it's because his voice, the way his voice is, doesn't sound ominous.
Yeah.
But what he's saying, you're right. If you just take that, that's pretty scary stuff.
That's his kick. I mean, he just wants to squeeze every bit of life out of you, right? And watch it leave you.
And he gets off on that.
Yeah. And we've covered some other people that were like that, right? That got off on that, the ending part of someone's life. Not the actual stabbing or shooting them, but they actually enjoyed seeing the life leave the body.
Oh, yeah. I think he's saying the same thing.
To me, that's the worst part.
Yeah. That part is scary. You're right. So, you know, as we always do, let's dig into Tommy Lynn Sell's early life. He's born on June 28th, 1964. Sells had a twin sister whose name was Tammy Jean, and they both contracted meningitis at the same time, around 18 months old. Tammy died from this meningitis, and Tommy survived. Just kind of an interesting fact. So he lost a twin very, very early on, and it was not that long after that his mother sent Tommy to live with his aunt, Bonnie. And he lived with Bonnie till he's about 5 years old. Now, what I thought was very interesting about this relationship, Gibbs, was later in life, Tommy Sells would say that these years that he spent with his aunt were the only bright spots in his entire life.
Yeah. So those early years was the only good part of his whole life.
Yeah.
And I think I read that she was going to adopt, the aunt wanted to adopt him, but that's when the mom decided to take him back.
Yeah.
So whatever he did have that was good was stripped from him.
Right.
And that probably just set the chain of events.
Well, and that's what I wonder. The mom, for whatever reason, didn't want him. And then all of a sudden she did.
Sure.
And not only would she not let the aunt adopt him, she never let her see him again, ever. Like, barred all contact.
So already we know the family's jacked up.
Oh, yeah. This family's definitely jacked up.
Yeah.
But so my question is, how much of Tommy's future path, which we know is going to be crazy as all get out, how much of it would have changed if he would have been allowed to stay with his aunt? I mean, one of the things that you and I talk about a lot, right? Nature versus nurture. Was he born this way?
We don't hear too many people come from a loving family.
Yeah.
You know, a non-abusive family that still go out. I mean, we've
had a couple.
There's a few. Scott Peterson, I think, was one.
And most of those have been like a
one-off
kills type scenario. I have not seen very many true psychopathic serial killers.
Haven't found a happy serial killer yet.
Yeah, that grew up like in a loving Brady Bunch type home. Thought that was interesting because you play the what if game. What if this one part of his life had changed? He'd grown up with his aunt. His aunt had treated him great. Would he have grown up to be totally different? Never killed anybody. I don't know. You can't answer the question, but I think it's interesting.
It is interesting.
So by 7, he's drinking alcohol. 7 years old.
Yeah, which really blows me away, man, because, you know, I just saw my 7-year-old niece the other day.
Mm-hmm.
7-year-old. And, you know, so innocent. So I can't even imagine being 7 years old and drinking. I don't get it.
No, so he was...
How bad is life?
Yeah, he was going into his grandfather's liquor cabinet and drinking alcohol. Now, by age 8, he starts spending time with a man. And this is really going to form a lot of his life to come.
Yeah, so drinking, skipping school.
He's already drinking. Yeah, yeah, he's skipping school. His mom's not paying any attention to him.
And what is that, first, second grade? Second grade?
What, 7? Yeah, that would be first, second grade.
Yeah.
He's spending time with this guy in a nearby town. And apparently he's sleeping over at this guy's house. It's really kind of cloudy as to who this guy is. I mean, they say his name. I just don't feel like saying his name.
Right.
But the man's later identified as a pedophile who molested young boys, and
he does
molest Tommy Lynn Sells. But what was crazy about, there's a lot of conjecture out there on the internet that Tommy's mom not only knew about it, but she condoned it.
She was okay with it.
Yeah.
Huh.
So this lady is she's something else.
Yeah. She takes him from the only positive thing in his life, keeps that person out of his life so he can't have that positive figure in his life. And then on top of that, she lets him stay with a stranger, drink, miss school, and now
get abused. Right.
Okay.
And if she really did know about it and condone it, I mean, that just is horrible. But either way, no matter how it happened, it did happen. And Sells would state that it was this abuse that affected him so greatly that he would ultimately relive these experiences while he was committing his crimes. And we're going to get into it down the road about children and why he does some of the things he does. And it's going to harken back to some of these things that we're talking about in regards to his early life. All right, Gib. So let's skip ahead to 10. And again, we're still only at 10 years old. He starts smoking weed at 10 years old.
10 years old, drinking, smoking weed.
And then at 13, as if it's not already strange enough, his behavior starts to get super creepy as a 13-year-old, because at one point he apparently tried to crawl into bed with his grandmother naked. That might be a red flag.
A little bit.
I'm not a mental health therapist, but I'm going to call that a red flag.
Not a good thing.
And then he tries to rape his own mother. And because of that, gets sent off for a mental examination.
Deserved.
I think we've talked about it on a number of episodes about people getting analyzed, we'll call it. The findings come back. They know what they should do for their child, and they just don't take the action.
Yeah, they don't take the action.
And that, I think you see that a lot, because we talk about it. It's a common theme as well.
Right.
So the next thing that we have to talk about is one day he comes home to the family trailer and just finds that everybody's gone.
Packed up and moved.
Yeah. They just left him.
So he's 15? 15, right? 15 and has no...
No, he's 13.
Oh, he's 13.
Yes.
13.
13, 14. At this okay. is 13, 14.
And the family leaves him. No goodbyes. No money. They're just gone.
Now, the family would later say that that's bullshit. We're going to talk a lot through this episode about what Tom... And I'm using air quotes that nobody can see. What Tommy Lynn Sells says.
These are his accounts.
Say that four times fast.
Yeah. TLS.
What really happened. Right. So we have to keep all of that in mind. But if you go by Tommy's account, he comes home, the family is gone. So he's all by himself. But either way, how it happens, whether they did or didn't do that, he's by himself, whether by his own volition or because he was forced to, because they thought he was a creepy weirdo and left him, which I wouldn't be too shocked.
Well, your grandma and...
You tried to rape your own mother.
Yeah, I think you'd probably be like...
You might want to pack your shit up and...
Maybe you should stay at the stay-at-home.
The stay-at-home inn? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the stay-at-home inn. Stay-at-home.
But this is where everything kind of starts for Tommy.
Yeah, because he's 14 and he's starting the train jump.
Yeah, this is where he's getting around. He's hitchhiking. He's train hopping. Now, his hometown is St. Louis. And he is traveling and will travel for the next 20 some years back and forth across the country like nobody's business. Now, because he's 14, right, we know he's not very well educated because he never made it past the eighth grade.
And
it's kind of hard to go to school when you're on a train going cross country.
And really know who knows how much education he got because he was truant so often.
Yeah, he was. You're right. There was a lot. His mother didn't make him go to school.
Yeah.
I think they got a lot of letters and warnings back in the day. This wasn't a guy destined to go to Harvard either way.
So how's he, I'm guessing he's traveling on these trains and when he gets to the city, probably just does some petty theft, gets enough money to eat, steals food. I mean, he's pretty much living like a bum.
Yeah, like a hobo. Like a transient hobo.
Yeah, at 14.
Yeah.
Which means he's probably not hanging around the best crowd, right? He's probably hanging around with a lot of the other transient hobo train jumpers.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think, and this is kind of interesting because it's this transient lifestyle, I believe, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but that ultimately probably allows him to get away with so many crimes because they happen.
Oh, it's convenient.
All over the place.
Right. I mean, he jumps off a train, stays in a town for a couple of days, can do
kill what somebody and then
jump the train and jumps next thing on you know, another train. He's, you know, 800 miles down the road doing it again if he wants. I mean, it's for sure, especially back then, it would be a nightmare for detectives.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. And I believe it's, like I said, I believe it's why he, not the only reason, but I believe it's a big part of the reason why he was able to get away with what he did for so long. That, and also the fact that like I said, he didn't have an MO, really. There was nothing to kind of link all of these murders that we're going to talk about together. So that also makes it much harder for law enforcement as well. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. Let's get into the murders, right? Because there's a lot.
So you say let's get into the murder. So he says at 15 is his first time he murdered somebody.
Yeah, that's what I had. That's what I saw too. 15, 16, something like that. You know, let's take a step back, because I think the police believe that the minimum number is 22. The maximum could be 60 or way, way higher. They're really hard to pinpoint this guy.
And I can see that pretty easily, that it could be that high.
Because we're talking about a span of 20 some years. Where, as we're going to see, he's not spacing these out yearly, right? It's not like on the full moon.
It's just sporadic, June, right? Just sporadically, he's at his, when his inner demon comes alive, I guess.
His frog demon?
His frog demon, yeah.
Yeah, and the problem with him is he likes to talk. You know, we mentioned that. So he takes credit for a lot of stuff that may or may not be true. And that's what's really kind of hard with Tommy Lynn Sells, is it's hard to tell what's true and what's not. Depending on how much you want to believe, his number could be 22, could be 40, could be 60. It could be in the hundreds.
Regardless, it's a nightmare.
It's a lot. So let's get back to what you were talking about. His very first murder, 15-ish.
15 years old. We'll call it. Yeah.
And by his account, because this is one that he gives an account later in life, he's breaking into a house. And I kind of have a big issue with this whole first one, so we're going to spend some time on it.
So randomly breaks into a house.
While he is in the house, he discovers a man molesting a young boy. Again, from the mouth of Tommy Lynn Sells. He kills the man because he's so enraged that he's molesting this boy. Now, let's go back to his early life. He was molested.
Yeah, age 7.
So this fits.
Yeah.
Right? He's upset.
Now he's a bigger kid. He can fight back, and he's going to fight back for this kid.
Right. That's the story he's telling. But a lot of what I saw was that there was a lot of evidence, and they really tried to figure this out. They could never substantiate the fact that there was any molestation going on, because you have to realize there had to have been a kid, because he doesn't say he kills the kid.
No.
Nobody ever comes forward. They can never substantiate the fact that this guy that was killed was a pedophile. So I have a hard time with it. I think, you know, he's using that to justify what he did. Now, he was molested, don't get me wrong, and that's bad.
Right.
But I think he used that.
He used his story.
As he went along.
I wasn't a bad person. I actually was defending a kid when I murdered. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I have the problem with. Because think about it, Gibbs. What's the odds that you're going to break into a house and just happen upon a man molesting a boy?
Should be very, very rare, I would
hope. It's what are the odds of that?
Yeah. So he's using this as, I never wanted to do this, but I was defending a kid. I killed this guy. And while I was killing this guy, that's when I got this feeling of this rush when I took this person's life. Because that's the only thing he can use to explain why he would go on to kill other people.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear him talk.
They started because I was pissed off. Here's what happened. The first one. I was casing a house out, getting ready to rob someone. And I was looking in the back room window, and I seen this guy performing oral sex on a 7-8-year-old boy, maybe younger than that. And that night I walked in there and shot him point blank. Well, I broke in there that night and shot him point blank. And it was such like a... That rage, that hate, that anger, it was just like doing a shot of dope, and it just God, it felt good. I get rid of all that anger, and then the next one came, and then the next one came, and...
But why did they come again?
It's like a heroin addict. When you do that first shot, you want another one, and then you want another one. You can't stop. It becomes your drug. I never went out looking for one person. It was just chance. Just be having a bad day and then take it out on the first person that crossed my path wrong.
So
now it's getting a little scary.
That gets scary, because then you're into, you know, if you're listening to this podcast right now, let's say you're in New York City, you're on the subway, you know, just look around real quick. Somebody on there is a serial killer. Let's just say it. If you're at the office, you stand up, look over all your little cubicles. Somebody in there is a serial killer. I mean, that's basically what he's saying.
Yeah.
It could be anybody with a person like Tommy Lynn Sells, because he wasn't looking for anybody in particular. He just had a bad day, and you happened to be the person that he ran into.
So next time you're listening to this in your car and you do a little road rage with somebody,
be careful.
Be careful.
You should be careful anyway about that. But so that first one happened in Mississippi. The other thing that was scary about that little audio clip, Gibbs, to me, is where he kept saying, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. He could have said that about 20 more times and not even have been close. Then we get into 1980. So the very next year, he's all the way out in Los Angeles, right? And you're going to have to get an atlas or something out to keep track of this dude.
That's going to be one of those maps that has the red line just, you know, crisscrossing, and he's all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, and like back and forth, right?
Yeah.
It's not like he's stopping along the way like the Griswolds as they're going to Wally World.
No, he's taking some good distance rides.
Like, he'll go all the way across the country, And then he'll come all the way back.
All the way back.
It's interesting. So he's in Los Angeles. He kills a man with an ice pick near a Chinese restaurant.
So what, he's 16 now?
Yeah.
Yeah. 16-year-old killing somebody with an ice pick.
This guy, he didn't have beef with this guy, apparently. I don't know if he was having a bad day, but he just wanted to kill this guy.
Just at the wrong place.
And we heard him talk a little bit about the rush. So that was obviously a part of it. And he said, kind of like a drug addict, he could only go so long before he needed to feel that rush. Now, why he felt the rush, that's the part I don't understand. You know, because this is not a sexual rush, as far as I know.
Not in all cases.
We're going to talk about some that...
I mean, he keeps talking about how it's that feeling you get when you have that high from a drug. That's what he's chasing.
It's that kind of rush, as opposed to what we've talked, where we've profiled some sexual sadists, where they actually are getting off from the act of killing. I don't think that's him. He's getting a different type of high.
I think, or somewhat, but I think later he...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Not in every case.
Yeah.
I don't think he got it from killing this guy in Los Angeles with the ice pick.
No, I think it develops.
Yes, he does. He does develop.
Because like everything, when you do it so often, you don't get the same high.
Well,
so you got to find a way to get that high, bring that high back, and it's normally to add something.
By doing it different or doing it more, right?
Yes.
So whether you're a crack addict... I don't know why I pointed at you. That was bad. I shouldn't have done that.
Let me put this stuff off the counter away.
Or no, whatever your vice is.
Yeah.
You know, some of those you can't keep at the same level and get the same satisfaction.
Well, if you're a bourbon guy, you know, and you're trying to get a buzz off your bourbon, you're not going to.
Eventually, you're going to have to ratchet it up.
Exactly.
So something big happens in 1982, Gibbs. Sells is back in Arkansas. He has a son with a woman that he would call his first love.
So he's 18 and has his first baby.
Yep. It's not that long after that the son is born, I think, that a man matching the description of Tommy Lynn Sells is seen leaving the residence of a family by the last name of Gill. And sometime later, the bodies of Colleen Gill and their 4-year-old daughter were both found beaten to death.
So 4-year-old Tiffany and Colleen are been beaten to death. They don't know who it was, but somebody matched his description in the area.
Yeah. Now, so keep in mind, we're going to go through these murders.
Sure.
None of these are going to be solved at the time.
At the time.
We're talking about what we know in hindsight.
Right. At that time. Gotcha.
Yeah, definitely. Now in 84... Tommy's serving a 2-year prison sentence for car theft, and he has a daughter. Well, he doesn't have a daughter.
So side note here real fast.
Yeah.
He steals a car. He gets 2 years. I'm just thinking of some of the other podcasts we did where, like, Lake, where they did much worse,
mm-hmm.
and they got parole.
This
stuff always bugs me.
Now, we are going to talk about him because he's in jail a lot, Tommy Lynn Sells, throughout this 20-year period. He's in and out of jail and prison. And he does some time.
When you're train hopping, jail probably is not a bad place to be. I don't think he minds being in jail. I some people would never want to go to jail. I think for somebody like him, as much as he moved around and lived off the streets and things like that, I'm guessing jail was probably a break for him.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I disagree, because then he can't do what he wants to do.
Well, that's true, too.
How's he going to get his rush? His fix.
So as soon as he gets out, then he goes on a major,
right.
major tour.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's a hobo in the sense that he's not feeding himself and he wants to go to jail to get 3 hot meals.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that way.
But he has to steal to get... He's going out and he's robbing places.
Right. He has to do what he has to do to survive.
So he's definitely living on the edge.
Yeah. And so as part of that living on the edge, he's going to get caught from time to time. But to say that he doesn't mind it, I would probably disagree with that. I think he's willing to take the risk of prison or jail to do what he has to do to survive. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
He's not hoping for jail, for sure.
No, no. I get you.
Nobody would do that. And I don't think that's what you meant.
No, I didn't.
So, again, he's serving a 2-year prison sentence for car theft. And not the same woman. This is a different woman. Has a daughter that is his. So, at this point, Gibbs, he's 20 years old. He has a brand new baby girl, a 2-year-old son by 2 different women. He's not taking care of either one of them.
He's a Casanova.
Yeah, well, he does have a sweet, sweet mullet. And I don't know if you've seen the pictures. I'm going to put the pictures up on my Facebook. This guy has a mullet. I think his mullet has a mullet.
If you put
like
that
it grew
picture
its
up,
own mullet.
I think somebody will probably do a meme. If you put that picture out there, somebody will do a meme of it.
No, I'll put it out there. But I'm literally, it's such a sweet mullet. I think that's how he was getting these women, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It might have been. Was that business in the front, party in the back?
Yeah. He was a little too much party, though, I think. So, you know, he, like I said, he's not taking care of these kids. He's not taking care of these women, for sure. He runs out on everybody. In 1985, he's working at a carnival in Forsyth, Missouri. Now, we're going to see this carnival theme come up a couple times. He likes to work at carnivals. He's kind of a carny, train-hopping, transient carny.
Carny. The only thing's missing is him dressing up in a clown outfit or something.
Yeah, well, think about a carnival. It moves. So it's like sure. A perfect job for him almost.
Yeah, and it's a perfect way to blend in with other people. That's the word I want to use. It's a good way to hide.
Yeah.
Right?
I got you.
Yeah.
It definitely is. So he meets a woman named Ina Court who has a 4-year-old son. She invites him back to their house that night. They have sex.
Because of the mullet. Yeah.
Now this, again, all according to Sells. So you got to believe what he's saying. They have sex. They fall asleep. He wakes up to find her stealing from his backpack. So not only does he have a mullet, but he's got a backpack. Now, if it had said fanny pack, that would have been the trifecta.
Yeah.
But it says backpack. So. He proceeds to beat Court to death with her own son's baseball bat. He then turns on the son and kills the son as well. The bodies of both were found a few days later. But by this time, getting back to the carnival theme, he'd already left town.
Yes.
Right? The carnival comes in. They set up for a couple of days.
Then they pull out of town. And
that's what they do. This is where I want to start talking about the killing of kids. Because this is going to come up as we move forward. I want to play this clip of Sells, and then I want you and I to discuss it.
Okay.
I know what I went through as a child. The nightmares, the drama, the reality of who I was and what was done to me. I never wanted that to happen to another person.
Tommy Lynn Sells argues that he killed children to put them out of their misery after killing their mothers.
If I had something against that person,
uh-huh.
And there was another person there that witnessed it, I didn't want them to carry that on their shoulder the rest of their life.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense? It's a sensation, tying that scarf around your neck and just watching your eyes, it's a sensation seeing that skin pull apart.
Yeah.
It's sensation sticking that knife in and just pulling and knowing it's sharp enough just go all the way up.
Yeah.
It's not the person. It's about the sensation of what you're into.
So I didn't realize, Gibbs, I think these get a little scarier as
yeah.
we go. But the part I wanted to focus on in that one was, again, what he's talking about. In his mind, he's saying, the reason why I've killed these kids, the reason why I need to kill these kids.
I'm entering, he's ending their suffering.
Right. He doesn't want them to have to live.
What he went through.
What he went through, or with the fact, the knowledge of what they've just seen him do to their mom or dad.
But he did it to their mom or dad.
I know.
He didn't want them to live through that. Don't kill their mom and dad.
Right. Well, we're not talking logical. We're talking Tommy Lynn Sells.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's just the kind of, you know, thinking and going back to the molestation that he endured. What did that play? And how is it playing into this fact that he thinks he needs to kill these kids because he's saving them from a lifetime of...
And if that's what he really thought he was doing, then why didn't he do that more?
Why didn't he just pick somebody that didn't have kids?
Yeah. But if he was going to kill the pick a family that had the kids, why did he kill them so...
In such a bad way?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, I don't think it makes sense. I think this is him talking, you know, years later to reporters. He's trying to make himself look better than what he really was, which was a piece of complete
freaking monster, dude.
Dookie.
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, that's why I wanted to play it. I wanted you and I to talk about it a little bit. So 1986, he's back in St. Louis. And this is one that he would recount later on. He says he's working at a towing company. And he gets this call from a prostitute, sex worker. I'm supposed to say sex worker.
Yeah.
Whose car had broken down. When he gets to the vehicle, he claims that he suggested, you know, let's do a little something, something in lieu of
a little bartering
for the tow cost. I won't charge you. She's not into it, which I don't know if you buy that or whatever. He shoots her and dumps her body in the river.
So he's ticked off because...
She won't have sex with him, I guess.
No blow for a toe.
Yeah. There you go. That does not make him happy. 1 year later... So right now, we're about... It's almost like every year something's happening. But like we said, that's not going to last for very long. Because we're at 87. He's now in the Niagara Falls area. Checking out the falls, I guess.
So he's all the way up in New York.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, he murders a woman named Suzanne Coors outside of a bar. She wouldn't be found for like 8 years. It was a long time before they actually found her remains. And they found him like within a couple miles from that bar.
That's interesting. That took 8 years to...
Yeah. Now, this is one that later on he would kind of confess to.
Okay.
And we'll talk probably about it at the very end, but we like to try to stay in chronological order as much as we can. 6 months later, he's all the way out in Nevada. You know, like we said, so St. Louis to New York. Now I'm out in Nevada.
And you thought I traveled a lot.
I know. This guy is setting records.
Yes.
But he strangles a woman out there named Stephanie Stroh.
I bet he liked that.
The strangling?
Yes.
Because of what? Him talking about seeing the life go out of somebody's eyes?
Yep. That he had that all in his hands.
I would imagine you're right, because I think a lot of stranglers, there's that, that's what they're into.
That power. It's a power. It's power trip.
A power move, but they're in your face, right? They're seeing your eyes. They're not coming up behind you and stabbing you or something like that. So I would agree with you. I'd say you're probably right on that one. That was 6 months later, right? So now we're a month later. So as you can see, he's starting to really increase his frequency. And I don't know if that goes back to he's not getting the same high. He's got to, you know, ratchet this whole thing up.
Well, he ratchets it up next.
Big time.
This is a freaky one.
Yes. This is the one that I had a hard time with. Well, I have a hard time with all of them. Don't get me wrong.
This is, I don't know if you can get much freakier than this.
So he murders a whole family.
Yes.
And like you said, this one is about as heinous as it gets. Initially, he shoots the husband first, which is a tactic that a lot of people use because obviously, in most cases, the husband is going to be the biggest threat.
Right. So you don't have to worry about fighting him off.
Right. Now, he rapes the wife who is pregnant.
9 months pregnant.
Yes. Great. Yeah. Good ad, because she's very, very pregnant. Due to have the child at any time. He beats the wife and their 3-year-old son to death with a baseball bat. He is kind of into baseball bats.
Yeah.
He likes to beat. So there's something with that.
Right.
That he probably drives.
That rage, frustration that he's gets to take out with.
Right? Yeah, there's some pleasure that he takes from the, that's a very violent.
Oh, extremely act. Violent.
Now, that in itself would be unbelievably horrific.
It would be.
If that's all that happened.
If that was the end of it, but it's not.
Because, like we said, she's 9 months pregnant. She actually gives birth while he is beating her.
Yes.
To death. And this baby is delivered. And again, this is where I think I had the, it was really tough.
It is tough.
But he beats the, newborn. I mean, hour old or minutes old
minutes.
Newborn to death.
Yeah. Sick.
And this is probably one of the first ones, because, you know, I don't have a problem with
about
this.
About as evil as you can be.
Yeah. These don't affect me normally the way that they affect you. I know you've said in the past, sometimes it's a little hard to eat.
Oh, I can't eat
when you're researching some of this stuff.
Right, can't sleep.
It does not normally, these don't normally affect me like that. This one did. This one had probably affected me in a way that none of the other individual aspects of any of the podcasts have affected me.
Sure.
It was just that bad. It made me sick to my stomach. So that was middle part of 88-ish somewhere. September of 88, he's up in New Hampshire. So he's made his way to New Hampshire. There's a girl up there who disappears, and she's later found dead on a railroad track. And this is kind of like one of the ones we talked about before, because the last time she's ever seen is in a parking lot of a store talking to a man that matched the exact description of Tommy Lynn Sells.
Yes.
Around the same time, so again, he's not even moving from place to place now. He's doing multiples in the same place, I believe. So I don't know how he gets involved with this mother and her 3-year-old son. But apparently they're begging for money as like a trio. And I don't know if they're doing this voluntarily or he's somehow coercing them into being a part of this ruse, but they're begging to get money. This one just kind of ends in the fact that neither the mother or this 3-year-old boy are ever seen again.
So all we can do is assume the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, normally when you don't ever hear from anybody again, that's a bad sign.
That's a bad sign.
You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Now, over the next several years, Sells is going to spend some time in jail. And we mentioned that up front. He does in different pockets of his life. You know, he does some time for some different types of theft, little things like public intoxication, stuff like that. Nothing like murder, nothing really big. But mix in during this several year period, so 88 to let's call it 91, 92, he kills a sex worker in Nevada. And this one's kind of strange because his reasoning was what, Gibby?
The sex worker ended up being a man and not a woman, so that freaked him out.
Yeah, I'm assuming he did not like that, and he's killed people for a lot less.
Yeah, I'm sure it didn't take much to flip that switch right on that one.
Yeah, and I think that's a good word, that his switch got flipped real quick.
Extremely quick.
When he found that out. But he did. He killed this sex worker who he thought was a woman, and I wonder how he found out.
Maybe it was like that movie, The Crying Game.
A Tucker?
Yeah.
Was it Tucker? So also, he is suspected of killing two other people in Oregon during this time period, in and out of jail, around his stints in jail. So let's get up to like 1992. Sells ends up in West Virginia, and he attacks a woman who, as a good Samaritan, basically takes him to her home and is trying to give him food and clothing because he's probably standing on the side of a street with a sign.
So when you see these people standing out there and you think you're going to want to give them a little help, right? Never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
I'm trying to discourage you from helping.
Well, I think that's the sad state of the world we live in today.
Yeah.
You have to be on guard at all times.
You do.
Because, again, this lady was trying to do something unbelievably nice for him. Giving food, giving clothing. So Tommy Lynn Sells repays this lady's kindness by raping and stabbing her. Did she do anything to him to flip the switch, Gibby? Not that we know of. By all accounts, all she was trying to do was help a guy out by providing food and clothing. Now, this story is kind of miraculous.
Well, she was a fighter.
She fought the living, you know what, out of him.
Stabbed him a few times.
Over 20 times.
So she was a heck of a fighter.
Somehow got his knife away from him, stabbed him over 20 times. He gets some kind of stool, and he's able to bring it down on her, and he knocks her out.
Yes.
Thinks he's killed her.
But thank goodness he didn't.
No, she's just unconscious. She survives. And ultimately, she plays a part in getting him convicted. But now this is kind of what I was talking about earlier, because he's only sentenced to serve 2 to 10 years.
Which kills me.
Right, because he did 2 years for car theft.
Right.
So now he's raped and tried to kill a woman.
But they dropped the rape charge.
You're right.
So,
but it still had to be attempted murder, right?
They probably pleaded down to assault.
That's bullshit.
That's what they do, you know. They go for what they know that they can comfortably get, and that's what they do.
How could they not get it? She survived to literally testify against him. Yeah,
that's just how it works.
You're right.
They plea it down. And
You are right. That happens a lot. But yeah, that is also the crux of my frustration about the legal system. And what we talk about over and over is how, you know, these people do these heinous things. They basically, and I'm not saying 2 to 10's nothing, but it's kind of a slap on the wrist. The guy only does 4 years.
Yeah, they never serve the full amount. No.
He ends up serving 4 years for raping and trying to kill a woman.
So what is he doing that 4 years in prison?
He does get married.
He gets married.
At one point.
How do you find a wife in prison?
Oh, these guys, there's all these women that like guys
like,
in prison.
They like that. I don't get that.
There's like a pen pal. And the theory that I've read on that before is that some of these women like it because they know exactly where their guy is.
Okay.
And these guys are very, they write to him all the time.
Because they're lonely.
They're lonely. They got nothing else to do. All their attention and affection is focused on this one individual.
So they're getting all this
Yep.
All this attention, and they like that.
So I have read a little bit about that, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
That makes sense.
But you're right. He gets married. And like I said, he only does 4 years. So he's paroled. He's out back on the streets in, by 97. He and his wife, they moved to Tennessee. But how is Tommy Lynn Sells Gibbs going to stay put in a marriage in Tennessee?
Well, he's not.
There's no way. This guy has been crisscrossing the country, killing people at will. He's not had to answer to anybody except for the few times that he's been in prison. And so, you know, he can't stay. He leaves her all the time and starts again.
Well, if he just got out of prison, he's going to have to get his fix.
Well, yeah, but he could do that in Tennessee if he wanted.
Yeah, but he likes that traveling around lifestyle.
Listen, we got to jump forward. We got to keep this train moving. October of 97. Sells is back up to his old tricks. He's traveling the country. He's in Missouri. His van breaks down outside of an apartment building. And outside of this apartment building, there's a 13-year-old girl playing outside. What Sells does is he waits for all the adults to leave the area to where she's alone. He abducts her and he kills her. They ultimately find her body in a small farm pond sometime later on. Now, at this time, he's back working at a carnival. I assume by now he's probably probably the pixie dust spreader on the Tilt-A-Whirl.
Perfect job.
Perfect for him. You know, he's just trying to work his way up the corporate ladder, hoping to start guessing people's weight or start barking for the yak woman. You got no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
I don't. That's got to be from a movie.
It is. Oh, man, you don't get my stuff.
I don't. What movie is that?
Christmas Vacation.
I don't even like that movie. I just don't remember that part.
So anyway, I know I'm making a little bit of light of this case, and it's a dark case, but
it is.
It's so dark, I think we need a little bit of light. So Gibbs, we're into 1998. And we're drawn to it. We're getting closer, right, to the final act of Tommy Lynn Sells.
So we in Texas now?
Yes, because he's with the carnival.
Traveling around.
And the carnival pulls into Del Rio, Texas. And Sells meets a new woman. I mean, this guy meets a lot of women now.
He does. It's the hair.
Yeah, it is the mullet.
Which I know you don't know anything about, but it's the hair.
I don't have any hair. I'm envious of this guy's mullet. This woman is a mother of four. Now, at this same time, remember, Tommy's married.
Yeah, just got married while he was in prison.
Right, while he's in prison.
A year ago.
At this exact time, his wife is back home giving birth to another son for him.
Oh. Well, good. He's got three kids now then.
He's got three kids.
Okay.
Three different women. But he doesn't have three kids because she gives this son up for adoption right away.
Probably a smart move.
It probably is. But he moves right in with this mother of four in Texas, and he marries her. Now, obviously the marriage isn't legal because he never officially divorced his wife. But this brings us to 1999. And 1999 is the crucial year in this case, because his activity starts to skyrocket. Now, you and I think this guy's a psychopath.
Yes.
Right?
We do.
You would agree with that.
I would absolutely agree with
that. All right. Well, let's hear from the psychologist.
Psychopaths are individuals who lack conscience. They lack remorse. They lack guilt. That's one of the reasons why they terrorize society so much. One of the key differences that we find in the brains of psychopaths is that there's a structural impairment to part of the brain called the amygdala. This is a part of the brain very much involved in the generation of emotion. It was structurally deformed in the psychopaths. They just don't have those normal feelings of revulsion and disgust. It's biology plus environment. It's biology coming together with environmental insults which raise the odds of an individual becoming a violent criminal offender. It's very difficult to control a psychopath. They're the person in control. And in fact, in an interview, psychopaths tend to take control of the interview.
It's exactly why you can't control me.
Because you're a psychopath?
I might be a psychopath. There's a lot of psychopaths, right?
Yeah, you have some tendencies.
Yeah, I might.
Yeah.
But I like a lot of what that guy's saying. It definitely is, you know, and he's talking about, he doesn't say it, but he's, talking this was TLS. A show about Tommy Lynn Sells.
Yes.
It wasn't just talking about any old psychopath. I think it's easy to see, and from what you hear in the audio clips, that, you know, Sells has no empathy for anybody.
No.
No, I think to him...
He lost that when he killed the little all the little kids, and then he killed a newborn.
Well, there again, I think committing those acts to him meant nothing.
No.
The rest of, or the majority of the population... can't even stomach to think about it.
Yes.
I think he actually did it and felt nothing.
No. He could have, I think he could have done what he did.
Nothing bad.
Nothing bad.
I think he felt a rush. Yeah. I think he felt euphoric.
I think he walked away and went to the McDonald's and ate a Big Mac.
Yeah.
Like exactly. Nothing happened. That's the type of guy he is.
And I think that is what's so scary about these individuals. So in April of 99, like we said, there's going to be a lot here in 99 that happens in a real quick succession. Deborah Harris and her 8-year-old daughter, Ambria, they're found stabbed to death in Tennessee. This is something that Sells would definitely claim responsibility for. So later that same month, and here again, we're talking about how quickly this guy's ramping up, right, Gibbs? In the same month, he just killed Deborah Harris and her 8-year-old daughter. He abducts a 9-year-old named Mary Perez from an outdoor fair, and he strangles her and kills her.
This is sick.
It is sick, and it's part of what we talk. This guy's kind of unlike anybody we've ever covered. Number one, he's in every state of the union.
Yeah,
which is crazy. He's killing people in not all 50 states, but he's making his way.
No, because you just talked about Tennessee. Now he's in Kentucky about 20, 30 days later, and he rapes and strangles a 13-year-old named Haley McHone in Lexington. And then he steals her bike and sells it for $20. And this is where we kind of go back to what we talked about. He probably didn't feel bad, or he didn't differentiate how he felt between raping and strangling this girl and stealing a bike.
So he did rape Haley.
He did.
Okay. I missed that. I missed when you said that.
Yeah. He raped her. Then he strangled her.
I would agree with you. I think if you took the rape and the strangle and set that on one side and you took the stealing of the bike, to him, it's no different.
No.
In a negative way. Now, he's getting a rush from
the... Yeah, but there's no guilt. He has no level of guilt for either one. Right.
I totally agree with you. Why is he picking some of these people?
What flips to his switch at the time was Ray. If he got mad or somebody did something, you know, just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time and you did something to frustrate him. I can't imagine these 13-year-old girls did anything to frustrate him. At this point, he's just a monster.
Yeah, because I think now it's like all of a sudden there's a sexual component. Yes. That doesn't seem like was there
prior.
Earlier on, because in July, he's out in Oklahoma. So he goes from Tennessee to Kentucky. Now he's all the way out in Oklahoma. He abducts a 14-year-old named Bobby Lynn Wofford from a convenience store. He sodomizes this poor girl and ends up shooting her as she's trying to flee away from him.
Wow.
So there, you know, obviously there's a sexual component to that and the one that you just mentioned. But why is that all of a sudden coming into play when it doesn't seem like that was it was a part of some of the other ones.
Right.
Because obviously we talked about it, but it wasn't a part of every single one. Now we were talking about Bobby Lynn. He dumped her body a little ways off the side of the road, and it wasn't found for like 4 months. Now, this is one that he would confess to as well. later on, right? Not in court so much, but later on he would say he did this.
Trying
one.
To clear his conscience or trying to rack his numbers up?
I don't think he has a conscience.
Yeah.
But this is one where there was actual evidence to kind of back up his claim. And we don't see that in very many of these cases because he had actually taken a pair of earrings off of this girl's, out of her ears and had them. So this was some evidence that they could use to corroborate his story.
To match it up, yeah.
And there was not a lot of that because, and that's why we said the number could be 22, it could be 60, it could be 100. Because he's made outlandish claims, I tend to think it's on the high side. I think if you look at what this guy was into and you look at all of his psychopathic traits and how much he traveled, I bet you it's higher than lower. What do you think?
I think I agree with you.
I would err on the side of it being 60, closer to 60 than I would 22.
I would too.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it would be 100, but I don't think 60 is that far out of the...
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to, you know, clearly we're never going to know.
No, but, we won't.
Yeah, but I agree. It's on the higher end for sure. Yeah.
So we jump forward to December. This is December of 1999. December 30th, to be exact. And Tommy Lynn Sells claims responsibility for four murders in Oklahoma. Danny and Kathy Freeman are found dead in their burning mobile home. Their daughter Ashley and one of their daughter's friends are never seen or heard from again. Now, Sells claims that he killed both of the girls and he dumped their bodies
in the Red River.
In the Red River, which is the river that
between Texas and
kind of makes the border, right? Yeah. Between Texas and Oklahoma. And the only reason I know that is because of sports and the Red River rivalry. That's when Texas plays Oklahoma. Because I don't travel extensively like you do. This is December 30th. December 31st, the very next day, is the most important case of the whole thing. Right? So he kills four people on the 30th. And then the very next day, Tommy Lynn Sells enters a Del Rio, Texas trailer. And this would be the home of Terry Harris. And Terry Harris was actually a friend of Sells. So Tommy was familiar with the Harris home. He'd been there.
So he knows the layout of the mobile home.
Right. And so here again, isn't that strange that this is, to my knowledge, the first time that he had known a victim? Because this whole episode, we've been talking about how he kind of runs into people.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, he chooses to pick and go into a friend's trailer. He's got a butcher knife. He's walking through the residence. Harris is out of town. So that's maybe part of it. But there were five people in this trailer that morning.
So he walks past some of the people and some of the other adults in the trailer?
Yeah. So he walks by Harris's wife.
Okay.
She's asleep with, I think, one of their daughters.
Okay.
And another bedroom is a young man, boy, I think probably one of their sons. And then in another bedroom, there's a bunk bed. And it's occupied by Harris's 13-year-old daughter, Kayleen, and her family friend, 11-year-old Crystal Searles. Tommy Lynn sees that the girls are asleep. And he lays down next to Kayleen on the bottom bunk. And he cuts off her underwear and he begins to do things he shouldn't be doing.
Okay. Sexually assault.
Let's put it that way. She wakes up very quickly.
I'd imagine so.
And she yells at her friend for help, who's in the top bunk. And Sells jumps up at the same time. So they're all kind of like, it's getting frantic. And he puts himself between the two girls and the door. so they can't get out. They are trying to get out. They right. grab the door. He's stabbing Kayleen with the knife. He then, and right now it's dark, I think. The lights are off. He turns on the bedroom light. He stabs Kayleen a total of 16 times. And he slits her throat multiple times and kills her. She dies basically almost immediately, I think. The injuries were so horrific. Now he turns his attention to Crystal because he realizes, you know, well, she's still here.
Sure.
She's in the...
And she just witnessed this, and he doesn't want her to suffer the rest of her life reliving this crime.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
Remember what he said.
Oh, yeah.
About people witnessing the crimes.
Right. Now, you and I know he doesn't want witnesses.
Right.
And we didn't talk about it going back, but if you go back to some of those ones where he killed some small kids, which is, you know, it's heartbreaking. Some of those kids were old enough that they possibly could have been talking at that point.
They could have.
Some. You know, 4 or 5 years old, I think, were there a couple.
I don't know how much they would say, but.
But I think there was some talk that maybe that was more of an issue than he didn't want them to have to live with what they had seen.
Yes.
Yeah. It was more about that. But let's get back to this incident. So, and we're going to hear from Crystal, because I'll just tell you right out, she survives. But Tommy Lynn goes up on the top bunk and slits her throat.
Mm.
And he exits the trailer. He wipes down some fingerprints on doorknobs. And he even takes a couple of window screens from where he had entered the trailer, just in case they had his fingerprints on them. Then he drives to his house. At some point along the route, he stops and he throws the knife and the screens out into a field. So that's done. Meanwhile, though, like we said, Crystal's not dead. She had pretended to be dead, which I mean, this girl had to be unbelievably strong. She thought everybody in the whole trailer was dead.
Well, that's why I was asking what happened to everybody else.
I think she assumed what you would have assumed, which is that he's killed everybody. So she doesn't even stop to wake anybody up. She gets out of the trailer and goes to the neighbors. Wakes up the neighbors. And at this point, I don't think she can talk because of the cut. Now, what I understand is that he did hit her, across the throat, but just kind of nicked the carotid.
So she was lucky.
Didn't get it, or you know she wouldn't have made it. So not being able to speak, I think she has to do some writing to tell the neighbors what's going on. They call, obviously, the police, the EMS. Everybody comes at this point. She's able to give them a very good description of the assailant. Composite is made. The attacker is immediately identified as Tommy Lynn Sells. I mean, number one, he picked a place where they know him, or at least the husband does.
Mistake number one.
Yeah. He is located and arrested on January 2nd.
Didn't take any time.
So New Year's has happened. Y2K's over. The world didn't end like everybody thought it was going to. Now, let's hear a little bit from, again, Tommy. Now, this is back in 2000, where he's actually talking to police just after the arrest.
I tried to get in this door right here, and I opened the window all the way up, well, about like this.
Uh-huh.
And I climbed in.
Okay.
I woke this girl up. I cut her bra, and I stabbed her here. And then she like jumped back, and then I cut her, and she fell down right here.
I couldn't get a lot of that, but the video was much longer, but I couldn't get... There's video out there, but no sound. This was as much as I could find with the sound, but apparently what he did is he took the police around, because he confesses immediately, right? As soon as he's caught, he confesses to this. Because he actually does say he's glad he's caught.
Okay.
At some point later on, but I think I'm calling total BS on it. In a videotaped statement of his confession, while he's giving his confession, Tommy Lynn Sells says, "I'm glad you caught me so that I would not hurt others." I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I think he wanted to...
He wants to control the narrative and control how he looks, maybe.
Well, soften. It's all about control.
Yes, we know that. It's been
about control since the first time he killed.
There's all kinds of evidence against Sells to corroborate his confession. You had Crystal's testimony with matched exactly with what Sells confessed to. You even the location of the murder weapon, he told him where that was. The medical examiner, their testimony matched the way the murder happened.
Right.
And all the blood and the fibers and all the CSI type stuff that was found on Kayleen. He was good about wiping fingerprints, but you can't mess with that DNA.
No.
I mean, you're going to drop something. That's why, I mean, I'm honest, man. I don't know how people are getting away with anything these days. With the advances in technology and with all this DNA.
I mean, you got to have the right hit kit, man.
Unless you are suited up or Michael Phelps hairless, I don't know how in the hell you're getting away with not leaving something behind. So, Gibbs, I want to play a clip of Crystal, and I can't tell you enough what I think of this young woman. To go through what she went through, to show the strength that she did. I mean, basically, she's the main reason that he's caught.
Sure.
Without her...
Who knows how many more he would have
killed. Without her, if she dies or she doesn't have the strength to do what she did, he could be doing it still today.
Yeah.
He could have gone on another 20 years.
Who knows how long?
We really don't know. So let's play this clip of Crystal.
He had a hand on her mouth and the knife on her neck. And she's looking at me and he just cut her throat and she fell to the ground. I heard Katie at the bottom of the bed on the floor at the bottom of the bunk bed. She was like gasping for air and choking like she couldn't breathe. He was about to shut off the light and he looked one last time. And he noticed that I was there. And he didn't hesitate at all. I mean, just shut the door, came right back towards me with the knife. The only thing that he said is, move your hands, because I had him up here. And he reached over the top bunk and cut my neck. I am very sure he thought he killed me. To be honest, he seemed blank. I mean, there was no emotion. It wasn't hard for him. All he would say is, move your hands. You know, it was just, I mean... After what I'd seen him do, he had no emotion in his eyes.
So again, I don't know if we're going the same place. She's confirming some of the things we've been talking about. He had just killed Kayleen in a vicious, vicious way. And then he walks over to Crystal and she's describing it to us as if it's nothing to him.
No, it's just doing any type of job.
I reach over and grab the remote and turn the TV on.
Exactly. It's to him, it's the same effort, same non-emotional.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. Again, what a brave and courageous young lady.
Unfortunately, you know, Kayleen lost her life and all these other, and we're not making, it's all horrible.
Absolutely.
We're focusing on this one because it's the one that brings about the arrest. Sure. You know, so as we said, he pleads guilty. We don't have a big, long, drawn-out trial with tape of prosecutors and defense attorneys like we might in other episodes. But some stuff comes out afterwards. In 2003, he ends up pleading guilty to the murder of Mary Perez. So those are the only two murders that he's actually held accountable for.
Okay.
Is number one, Kayleen, which he pleads guilty to begin with. And then later on, they must have got enough evidence on him to charge him with Mary Perez. So he does plead guilty to that. Now, he confesses to a whole bunch of stuff, that's how we know about all the murders we've talked about.
Correct.
In 2004... he officially confessed to the murder that we talked about of Suzanne Corse in Niagara Falls. And also in 2004, something else very interesting happened. He confesses about something we haven't talked about. And this is where he had broken into a home. had taken a knife out of the butcher block in the kitchen, and he had stabbed a little boy to death named Joel Harper. After he killed Joel, he scuffled with Joel's mom. Didn't kill her, and then ultimately left somehow, in some form or fashion. I don't have every single detail on this one. But Joel's mother, her name was Julie Harper. She was ultimately convicted of killing her son.
Mm, wow.
Even though from the very beginning, her story was that a masked man came in, stabbed her son in the bed, and then struggled with her and then ran out. So it wasn't until Sells confessed in 2004 that they were able to take a look at her case again. And then even then, she wasn't acquitted till 2006.
Wow.
And that's one of the things that I have an issue with the justice system. It does seem like once they know that there's no way somebody could have done it, it takes a long time for that person to get out.
Yeah, it takes a while to unwind it.
Did they have more than just his confession? Were they able, maybe they weren't able to corroborate it? Think about the dichotomy of that. Because you have Tommy Lynn Sells, who cares about nothing.
Yeah. But now all of a sudden has a conscience about some woman that...
But he does the right thing here.
Yeah. Maybe it's his way of trying to get straight with the above before something happens.
Maybe. I don't know. But that is such at odds if you look at those two things. Yeah. He's able to kill with impunity, no empathy. It doesn't bother him in the slightest. But yet now he does, I guess I'll call it a good deed.
Well, yeah, at least an innocent woman.
And how horrific is that, that this lady was accused and convicted of killing her little boy?
Yeah.
And she never did it.
She didn't even have time to grieve.
All right, so I think we have to wrap this up with the execution. And it occurs on January 3rd, 2014. His death sentence carried out by the Texas State Penitentiary in Huntsville. As we know, they don't mess around in Texas.
Mm-mm.
When asked if he would like to make a final statement, he says no. He's got nothing to say.
Now he doesn't want to talk.
No. He's been talking for a long time.
Yeah.
15 years or so. And now he doesn't want to talk. He gets a dose of pentobarbital.
Sure. Good mix.
Trying to make sure I say that right. Takes a few deep breaths, closes his eyes, and he starts to snore. That's how it was relayed. Less than a minute later, he stopped moving. 13 minutes later, 6:27 p.m., he's pronounced dead. And that's the end of Tommy Lynn Sells. Let's play a little clip about that.
Tommy Lynn Sells was executed tonight and pronounced deceased at 6:27 p.m. When asked if he wanted to make a last statement, he just simply answered no. The lethal dose of chemicals began to flow at 6:14, and at 6:27, Sells was pronounced deceased. He was convicted of the capital murder of 13-year-old Kathleen Harris. We're now going to have representatives from the victim's family make a few brief statements.
Why did I want to be here today? Because I wanted to see him die. That's honest. I wanted him to see that, to know that he can no longer hurt anybody.
I'm the grandfather of Mary B. Pettis. I have waited so many years for this day. A lot of people might say, this is cruel. But to me, to see him die as today, I'm happy. And other people know that this is cruelty, but it really isn't. It's payback time, okay? We all have suffered so many years. But we have gone through hell and back. But seeing this today, I'm a very happy grandfather, but I will never see my granddaughter again.
There was a whole bunch of people that spoke, and I just picked the second two The last person, obviously, was the grandfather of Mary Perez. And, you know, I think what he said, I think I'd feel like that too. Maybe I wouldn't want to, but I believe I would.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, there's the, I don't care whether you're pro death penalty or against the death penalty. You know, you can't take away this guy's right to feel the way he wants to. He was happy. He said so.
Yeah.
He was, it made him happy to see this man die because this man took away his granddaughter. The person that spoke right before was Kayleen's brother.
Oh, that's who that was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the guy in the very beginning who was a prison official, he said Kathleen.
That's what I thought I heard.
But everything I have is Kayleen. Yeah, I don't know. I feel kind of feel bad for that guy. You know, he's sitting in front of the media. If he butchered...
And he said the wrong name.
If he said the wrong name, that's kind of bad. But anyway, you know, I think Tommy Lynn Sells got what he deserved. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
I think he got off easy. I think I would have gave him some medicine, made him feel like he was going to die, and then bring him back, and then give him some medicine and make him suffer again and bring him back. And
man, you're a sick son of a bitch.
I am. Well, you know, he look. I,
but not as sick as him.
No.
Because this
he
guy.
Messed with, he messed with kids, man.
Yeah, he did. And.
Just the golden rule. Never mess with kids.
And in some horrible ways. You know, he just did some horrible stuff. But, you know, it's an interesting story. It's a heartbreaking story. But again, I mean, this is what we do, right?
Yeah.
We cover these cases. Like you said in the beginning, I've got a list a mile long. Unfortunately, we're never going to run out of these cases.
No.
We could be sitting here in our rocking chairs covering...
Just what we could cover in North America, well, just in the United States, right? I mean, we're not even talking branching out into, and we will.
Which we're going to, right.
But, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I will never have to worry about running out of stories that currently exist, and we know how it is today.
There's that, more being made.
Yes.
That's a sad state, but I guess for the True Crime All the Time podcast.
You guys are set.
We're okay. We're not going to run out. So... For Mike Ferguson
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.